Welcome to The Milk Check, a podcast from TC Jacoby & Company, where we share market insights and analysis with dairy farmers in mind. Welcome back to part two of our October 1st discussion with Mike McCauley. In part one, we discussed the new trade agreement between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Today, in this part two, we discuss the new California milk marketing order.
Mike, Anna printed off a copy of the order here last week, and I took a quick look at it. And, you know, in my layman's view, I don't see a hell of a lot of difference between the California order and the other orders. We use Richie McKenna here as consultant on federal order issues, and I asked Richie to see if anything jumped out on the pooling provisions and unit pooling and so on. Nothing jumped out to me. You know, we've always worked very closely with the MAs, and we've had a nice relationship with the MAs representing smaller and independent factors in the order. We know that the big boys get sometimes a little overly aggressive and manage to aggravate the federal order officials. So our relationship has been quite good in that area. So a couple of things I think will determine how the federal order in California plays out. The first thing is who are the handlers and how is it structured for pooling purposes? You know, there's still enough handlers in the Midwest, for example, to be able to cobble together a unit to keep little guys pooled, even though the big boys sometimes work diligently to try to thwart that effort. We still do it. Doing it in California, I don't really have a good sense of who the Class 1 handlers are and who the pool distributing plants would be in order to know whether or not there might be the ability to handle unit pooling for people of an independent nature there, of a non-cooperative nature, or a proprietary nature is a better way to say it. What's your view of how that looks from that perspective? If you're an independent manufacturer of cheese, for example, and you want to maintain your own milk supply, you know, and also, of course, minimum price under the order provisions do apply, how is that going to work out?
I think the order language is very similar to other orders, and the reason is that MAs actually told me that a lot of that, if not all of it, was basically copied over from other orders. So the language is very, very similar on most things, and they're, to my knowledge also, and I've been through it a number of times with the MAs in seminars and so forth, I don't really think there's anything that would jump out that would be different. Really, the main issues is what you've already brought up is around pooling. And when we went through the federal order hearing process, the co-ops and the farmers pushed for mandatory pooling like it is today in the CDFA system and has been forever really in the CDFA system. However, as you know, the market in California is very different than other orders in the U.S. that would have mandatory pooling. And it looked a lot more like the upper Midwest, where you've got a high percentage of milk that goes into manufacturing. So, you know, I can say 80%+ of the milk in California is class 3 or class 4 under federal order. So in that case, with the high manufacturing milk utilization, you're going to have more liberal pooling and decooling rules, which is what they've adopted. And the market farmers and the cooperatives do not necessarily like that. That wasn't their option. That wasn't their choice. But that's what they ended up with. So,
well, the order reads, excuse me, Mike, but the order reads 90% in class 1, or pardon me, 10% in class 1, 90% diversions. So that is very liberal.
Yeah, it's only a 10% secret requirement.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty low bar. Now, we should probably have a call a year from now, because it's probably going to be that long before we really see how this is actually going to work out. As you probably know, the USDA has done several things, made several basically allowances to get this up and going without trying to minimize the disruption to the marketplace. First of all, on November 1st, every dairy farmer in the state will be qualified. So they won't have to go through touch-based provisions or anything. So they're going to qualify every dairy farmer that shipped into a Class 1 plant in the last year, in the last 12 months. So don't have to worry about that. Secondly, they have established a system through July 31st of 2019. So if you are that independent plant that has shippers, they're going to be direct ship milk, and if you want to pool, you can actually join this system and or be part of this system, and you can be pooled through this system through the middle part of next year. Now, the key to that, the caveat that is, you're either all in or you're all out. They're not going to allow partial pooling through this system. So it's either 100% or 0%. So people will have to decide fairly early on if that's what they want to do. After July 2019, there will either be a base system put in place by some parties out there. I know that the cooperatives, they have looked at systems. They have also looked at the federation to be able to instead of creating a system, maybe just create a federation. And, several co-ops, and you can also, if you're that independent plant and you want to, pay the co-ops to handle cool that milk as a non-member milk, that would be an option for them to have discussions with some of the other independent plants out there that can find up some of those Class 1 plants to create a system to ship into. There are four producer handlers in the state that are going to see some pretty significant changes to their business. So those are ones that probably I know are getting talked to and getting phone calls from some of these independents if they can ship milk into them. So there's a fair bit of stuff going on right now and some discussions going on right now. But I think those discussions are going to continue on out into 2019 as the system and the federation and some of these things come into place.
Who are the Class 1 handlers in California? You got Safeway, Altadena.
Safeway, Beans, Kroger. Safeway, Albertsons, Kroger. We've got to be a couple of your integrated ones. HB Hood has some milk there. The producer handlers, Producers Dairy is pretty good size. Foster Farms, Rocky Farms, and Hollandia down in Southern California. Those are going to be the major ones.
Well, it's hard to visualize the independents, Kroger, Safeway, Dean. They would probably contract with CDI or whoever. You basically, CDI pretty much calls the shots. You've got Land O'Lakes. You've got DFA.
It's really CDI, to my knowledge, CDI and DFA are the ones with the majority of the Class 1 milk sales. Or the sales in the Class 1 plant. What I've heard is Land O'Lakes has minimal, if any, at this point, Class 1 markets. So it's really the two major co-ops are the ones that have most of the sales in the Class 1 plants. But then there's, like I said, it's also those independent producer handlers that are going to be, before them, are going to become regulated. They also buy milk from the outside, whether it's independent milk or co-op milk.
Is the producer handler limited to 3 million pounds a month still?
That's the threshold, same as every other order. So there are some small producer handlers that won't come into regulation, but those four bigger ones are all going to become fully regulated.
So they were bigger than 3 million.
Yes, they're all over. Yes, they're all over 3 million.
Yeah.
Producers, Fosters, Rockview, and Hollandia.
Yeah.
What about the transportation credits? How's that going to play out?
That's a big deal for Southern California. So what effectively has happened in the past is that the co-ops who would market the milk in Southern California would take the local milk. Most of the local milk would go into the cheese plants and maybe some into the food plants. But since they were able to get the transportation credit, a fair bit of that Class 1 milk would come down from Kern County or maybe even Tulare County. And then they were able to offset the transportation cost. transportation credit that came out of the pool. As of November 1st, transportation credit goes away. So now all of a sudden, there is a real cost, obviously, of hauling meltdown. You're looking at $1, $1.20 a hundredweight haul melt from, you know, Southern Kern County all the way up to Tulare to get it down into LA into those plants. So what has gone back to those plants, actually all plants in Southern California, are now getting hit with a transportation charge. All of a sudden, the cheese plants are getting hit from a couple different directions. They're going to have their regulated milk price is going to go up. So they go from a 4B to a class 3. Then they also get a new transportation charge, which they haven't had before. So basically, the elimination of transportation credit for the Southern California plants is not the pain of that is now being shared across all plants.
When you say shared across all plants, what do you mean?
What's getting charged back now in the contract negotiations is that the elimination of transportation credit, since there is a cost of hauling meltdown, the co-ops are about half some of that increased cost onto the plant. So each of the plants in Southern California are now getting a new, which they haven't seen before, they're now getting a new transportation charge on their melt.
I see. So that melt is going to be more expensive going into those plants in Southern California.
Yes. And for the Class 1 plant, they're able to pass a fair bit, if not most of that along, whereas the cheese plants can't. So that's going to be a real challenge for the cheese plants in Southern California to deal with both the higher regulated milk price as well as the higher the additional transportation costs. So it's in the next, a couple of them may not take very long, but over the next year or two, they'll likely be plants that will either idle back production or potentially even close.
What is the expected difference between the old 4B and the Class 3?
Depending on what time period you look at, it can be pretty significant. If you look at the last 3 years, this is from the middle of 2013 to the middle of 2018, so 5-year average. So the increase on Class 3 would be 83 cents a hundredweight. It's about, and then on Class 4, it's about 24 cents a hundredweight. Most of for the Class 4, most of that increase is on the fat. It's about a 5.9 cents per pound increase on the fat cost, about half a cent on SNF. And on Class 3, it's the same. It's about 6 cents increased cost on the fat and a little over 7 cents on the SNF. So 83 cents a hundredweight is, you take that and you add out another 50 cents plus to transportation. You're looking at cheese plants in Southern California, looking at additional $1.30, $1.40 in their milk costs due to the upcharge and regulated price and the transportation.
For those plants in Southern California, for plants in the Central Valley, it's probably going to be what?
It's going to be, while we're talking about the California order, I've actually half jokingly, half seriously said there's really two orders in California. The Southern California market over time is going to look like the Southeast order or Southern order, where it's largely Class 1 utilization. The cheese plants won't be able to compete with this. You've got declining local milk supplies. You've got increased costs now for cheese plants, higher transportation that they can't really offset. And it's as I said, 40 years ago, there were cheese plants in Tennessee and in the Southeast, but they aren't there anymore. So the same thing will happen over time in Southern California. And it was going to happen no matter what system was in place. This just speeds up that process. Once you get up in the valley, the other thing is with Southern California, with the 210 differential, cheese plants likely down there, even with Class 3 being above Class 4, the value of the pool will still be high enough that you'll probably want to pool Class 3 milk in Southern California most of the time. Very different situation when you move up into the valley. Now you're looking at $1.60 Class 1 differential. And for most times, you would see Class 3 be pooling. So now all of a sudden, maybe you don't have to, you're now not bound to the Class prices. And, if the blend price, if the gap is, 75 cents or a dollar less than class three, those cheap plants might not have to pay that regulated class three price. They can pay something less if it's equal enough.
And that starts to bring up the issue that's been in the back of my head for ever since people started talking about a federal order in California, which is, it seems to me that most of the farmers in California believe that by moving to a federal order system, there's magically going to be an extra dollar or so in their milk check. Whereas, in our experiences, the market is what the market is. And the reason that dollar wasn't there already was because the market couldn't bear it.
I think Mike's analysis is very astute in looking at it as basically similar to our situation vis-a-vis the Southeast. What is the rationale for driving the manufacturing industry out in areas of high class one utilization? Why does DFA particularly, and evidently CDI in this case, feel that's to the advantage of the co-op or the milk producer? I mean, I don't see it. I never felt that driving the manufacturing industry out of the Southeast was profitable for anybody.
Well, it drives your blend price up. I mean, that's the basic thing that everyone's going
to
see.
On the producer side.
It does drive your blend price up, but it drives your pay prices down.
And your balancing costs up,
Your balancing costs through the roof.
Absolutely.
I tend to look at it a little bit like labor unions. You know, they get so focused on getting the wages up as high as they can, they lose sight of the fact that if you get those wages up too high, the jobs go away altogether.
Yeah. And I'd say that my short answer would be, I guess, maybe a bit cynically, with my 20-plus years in dairy, I joke that a lot of decisions are made on what it says the next month's milk check, and not necessarily the milk check 5 years out or 10 years out.
And I think you're exactly right. And that's evidently what's going to happen in California.
And I think that, as I look at it, I mean, the whole idea that they started was that the farmers wanted a higher milk price. They saw that the order price, the class three price especially, and thought they were getting screwed. So we need to go to this federal order system. And the farmers, even, not very many months ago, were saying, well, of course the cheese plants are going to pay the class three price. And they never understood the concept of decooling. So this is going to be a real learning experience for them. And how I net out on this is, I think the clear winner will be the dairy farmer in Southern California. They're going to have plants chasing after them all. And, while it's a declining milk shed, they're going to have more demand than what there is supply there. So they're going to win. And farmers in general are going, at least to start with, they're going to end up ahead because that transportation credit won't be coming out of the pool anymore. So they're at least going to get that money back to them to start with. It's a different situation once you get up in the valley as cheese plants start looking at this and say, well, I really don't need to pay a regulated price. I'm going to de-cool, and I'm going to pay somewhere near the blend price. My comment was, I think the Central Valley farmers net out pretty close to where they're at today.
So the PPD, if you got that low utilization, the PPD is going to be what? Sounds sort of like Order 30, where you're in the 15, 20 cent range.
Oh, negative. Over the last couple of years, it's been negative up in the valley.
Based on what federal order extrapolations have been done.
Yeah, it's tough. And that's assuming all the milk is cooled, which of course it won't be. But if you take a bunch of three out, you're going to drop even more. So, if you make an assumption that powder eventually bounces back and gets over a dollar, then maybe there's a little more of a hope for that four to be over three at times. But over the last couple of years, it's only happened 2 months out of the last couple of years. Now, over the last 5 years, you've got to go back to 14 with high powder prices. There were a number of months in 13, 14 when four was higher than three, which would say you would cool your class three milk at that time. But over the last couple of years, that hasn't been the case.
If pooling is particularly difficult, it isn't particularly difficult, and if the PPD is irrelevant in the Upper Valley. So it sounds like the federal order will be superfluous to the manufacturing industry in the Upper Valley.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Which would mean that the proprietaries in that area probably would continue business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike's observation that the real beneficiary would be those that are located south in the high population density areas.
The farmers, right. Farmers, in the Imperial Valley and, any remaining in, near L.A.
Yeah.
Would definitely benefit, as they should, just like farmers in the southeast benefit as well. Now, granted, they have higher production costs, as I would assume that they also do in Southern California.
Well, we do run pooling programs, for example, that pool on some of the southeastern harbors.
Mm-hmm.
And we benefit from those programs.
Mm-hmm.
But
the cost of that is transportation costs.
It is, mostly. And you get what you pay for.
Right.
So you don't really, you pay into the pool and then you get it back if and when you ship.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of incentive.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's a PPD difference. And if your PPD difference is nominal, what's the point?
I think over time, if you're an independent, if you've got a cheese plant in Central Valley and you've got independent shippers, over time you could probably just go on your own. Like a Wisconsin cheese plant might be able to do. You don't have to worry about pooling. You just maintain your direct ship milk and go about your business. And there's probably going to be times, or there will be times, that you could be uncompetitive. But and maybe at that point you get forced into doing something a little different. But if you look at the last couple of years, and that's one of the things that the market administrators make very clear in the July seminars they put on is that they've effectively deregulated 90% of the market in the state.
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll take a year.
Here's a couple other things that, as you mentioned, that the PPD I wanted to bring up, because one of the changes will be what a farmer's milk check looks like. And there's two important things that they have not seen before. And it'll be a question of how they like this. The first thing will be a PPD. They don't know what it is. Secondly, they've never seen it before. And third, it's probably going to be naked. And if their first milk check comes in with their new federal order and they got a minus on there for something they don't know, they're probably not going to be very happy about that. The second thing, which is a much bigger dollar value, which is also going to be new, is the quota deduction. Today, within the time the quota system has been in place, that money to pay the quota holders has been deducted from the pool before anything was paid out. So if all happens, there's not going to be anything really new change from today to when the federal order gets, but it's going to be visible. Today it runs, but it's kind of out in space somewhere that you really don't see. You may know it's there, but you don't see it. Starting with the federal order, there's a separate program now to implement that quota. And the quota is going to be deducted from the milk check. I think that's probably going to be shown as a deduction off the milk check. What that means, if you're a 1,300 cow dairy, which is not very far off an average dairy in California, that's going to be about $10,000 a month that is going to be deducted. And when it was originally agreed to last year, what the farmers have in mind is about 37 cents a hundredweight for that quota deduction. CDFA is going to take a couple cents for implementation costs. So they have in mind that it's a hundredweight. It actually isn't. The deduction is actually off F&F pounds. So if you're now a high component, if you got high component milk, now you're not paying 37 cents a hundredweight, you're probably paying 40 cents a hundredweight. You're going to pay even more into this deal. And particularly for $1,000 a month is that's kind of important, particularly in this environment where margins are pretty tight. Where I'm going with all this, I think that it's going to drive another discussion at some point around the value of that quota program, and it really exacerbates the friction between the haves and the have-nots in that. So those are, I think, a couple important things that are going to change just from a Melichuk standpoint when we get this new federal order.
Mike, how does the quota apply to an individual dairyman in this situation? How does he control how much Class 1 quota he gets?
You buy it.
Well, they have
you either have it or you buy it.
You just got to buy it?
Yeah. So 10, 12, 13 years ago, there was a pretty extensive study done on this, and there was actually a quota committee which went nowhere. But at that time, the quota held by dairy farmers in California was valued over $1 billion. My understanding is, somebody told me, is approaching $2 billion. So there's a huge asset on farms' balance sheets. And that's why this is such an emotional issue about, well, we'll just do away with it. Well, it's, for some people, it's a huge amount of money. So you can actually go and buy it. You can actually trade it, or there is a possibility you can actually go and buy it. But if you don't have quota, you still have to pay into the system. And this is another important difference here. Grade A milk. It's grade A milk. So if you're a grade B shipper, technically that grade B milk would not go into a class one plant. And you would not have a quota deduction off of your milk if you're grade B. So now we get back to you. Well, if you're a cheese plant and you don't need grade A milk, or you can maybe go out and go, take farms to grade B and save them 40 cents a hundredweight. Now there's some discussions around whether they're actually going to allow that to happen longer term, whether they're going to change some of the rules in CDFA to keep that from happening. I've seen some comments that the quota deduction is going to come off all milk, regardless of grade A or grade B. I think technically in the legal language today, it's only on grade A, so you could be grade B and miss and skip out on that in today's language, but I know there's some movement afoot to try to change that.
Do you think there's anyone that can actually get away with that, that doesn't care if their outputs, like their cream, is grade B?
That's the issue. If grade B messes up your cream or your waste stream, then it doesn't work. But if you don't have an issue with that, that would be an option that's available, at least in today's rules.
Take someone, that would mean it would probably be harder for a Leprino than a Hilmar, because a Mott's plant spins off a lot more cream than a Cheddar plant. But take someone like a Hilmar. I mean, they can put their own internal quality standards up as high as they want, but then they could say, but we're only going to take grade B milk. And so all their farmers could be technically grade B milk coming in, even though the quality standards are high enough. And then they use all that milk to make cheese. They don't spin off a lot of cream in a Cheddar plant. Yeah. And I don't know, and honestly, I'm not sure how important the grade A status is for the whey industry. And generally speaking, my belief is it's not.
Yeah, I think you got, we've had some discussions around, grade A on dry whey, whether there's any value for that or not. But I think once you get beyond, there's very little dry whey made in the state. Most of it's the higher protein products, 34, 80, 90, and what have you. And I don't, to my knowledge, there's really not a lot of, to your point, it's more around quality specs and things like that versus a grade A qualification on it.
That would support the use of UF skim.
It would.
In a major way.
It would.
To chew up the available butterfat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe one of the reasons why some people are looking more heavily at doing that now in the last couple of years, in the last year or so, than we've seen prior to that.
Well,
particularly in the mozzarella area.
I'm not so sure. I think that has more to do with an actual quality standard.
It does improve the quality, but the people were resisting in the Italian cheese area going that way for quite a while, and now all of a sudden they're not resisting much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, things are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And this will really cause the balls to go back in the air in a lot of ways. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm. It will be. It will be. But I can't help this whole conversation about the farmer's milk check in California. It makes me, it reminds me of that, you know, 16-year-old who gets his first summer job and comes home with his very first paycheck and he goes, who the hell's FICA and why is he taking all my money?
Are producers prepared for that? Has anyone been kind of mentally and emotionally preparing them for these big deductions for quota and everything that they're going to see? I mean, we know they're going to see them, but I'm guessing they don't know.
I can tell you, no, they're not. It would be nice, and we're getting off the track here a little bit, but it would be nice if a little education on the farm end could be done that makes the point that legislating higher prices isn't going to work. You know, just because you put in a regulatory system here that says the Class 3 price is going to be higher than the Class 4B price, that doesn't mean that money comes back to the farmer. It could actually be just the opposite, which is evidently what's about to happen. We're going to redistribute where the money goes. It's going to go to the southern part of the state at the expense of the northern part of the state. And at the end of the day, there won't be any difference.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
So, you know, we'll see.
And that, you know, we haven't even got into talking about the impact of the plants. All the manufacturing plants are now, let's say, arguably at least directionally less competitive than what they will be, than what they have been on a CDFA system, to where their regulated milk prices go up, whether they're going to be cool or not. But let's just say, if they are, particularly the Class 4 plants being regulated, the regulated milk costs go up. How are they going to recover that in the marketplace?
Right.
And by the way, transportation costs are a big issue right now too. So then what do those farmers actually see? At the end of the day, our operating losses, do those get passed back in the form of reblends? And one of the chief plants told me a couple months ago, I said, well, all you have to do is just pay a little over the blend. Their point was, you might not even have to pay the blend if the farms are seeing reblends.
Especially if a couple of plants decide they're going to close their doors, because as we've seen over the years, the number one factor in influencing an overorder premium is competition for the milk supply. And each plant that closes is one less plant competing for that milk supply.
That circles back.
Right. Two close this year. You've got another one, a couple that are running less than full, or in some cases, a lot less than full. And rumors are probably one or two shutting down pretty quickly after the first of the year. So there's, to your point, you're gonna lose some of that that capacity.
I still don't see why people seem to have the view that driving the manufacturing business out benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if let's say you're located in Georgia. If you had a cheese plant down there and you were charged with keeping it full, you know, the volatile supply down there has 6 months of surplus milk and 6 months of shortage. You know, you don't have the balancing obligations at the cheese plant. You do have some, but you could work around it, and the whole industry would seem to me would benefit. Your balancing costs would be reduced to virtually nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the balancing costs would be internalized by that cheese plant, George.
Well, by the pool in the order.
Right.
He pays a premium. He gets a lower Class 3 price as opposed to the Class 1, but the Class 1's not going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he'd dilute the blend a little bit. But what? A few cents of dilution of the blend can be made up very quickly by marketing advantages and balancing costs, particularly with transportation the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna see California, unless somebody comes to their senses, we're going to see California play out the same way.
I think, especially in Southern California, I think you're right.
Yeah. They've already succeeded. The Chino Valley dairymen started 20, 30 years ago, moving mm-hmm. out of there, and they went to New Mexico and Texas and now up to Michigan and so on. Those guys are gone.
Mm-hmm.
But they still got some farms, most of them located in the Upper Valley.
Right.
They're going to be watching this thing.
And my point has been 10 years from now, there are going to be fewer cheese plants in Southern California under the CDFA system. You go to a federal order system, it just speeds up the process of forcing some of those out of business or changing the way they do business.
Yeah,
right. Okay. Hey, Mike, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. This was really helpful.
So, you're very welcome.
Same here, Mike. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
We welcome your participation in the Milk Check. If you have comments to share or questions you want answered, send an email to podcast@jacobi.com. Our theme music is composed and performed by Phil Kagi. The Milk Check is a production of TC Jacobi & Company.